Hi, I'm Nicolette, and welcome to Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa. Today, Pastor Char Broderson is in the third and final week of our mini-series on hospitality called A Hospitable Community, inviting you into a conversation about biblical hospitality. As the church, it's our job to show the love of God to everyone, whether we think they're deserving or undeserving. That's the gospel, and the only way to practice and cultivate it in our lives is to just do it. You were a stranger to God, but Jesus made a way to bring you to his table as an honored guest, as his son and daughter. We have a stewardship to the gospel to welcome others. So how should all people be welcomed into the church? Biblical hospitality is a posture and practice that gives permission for humans to be authentically human, welcomed and comfortable as they are. Hospitality says you are never too much and always enough. Who are the people around us that need this hospitality? What would it look like to cultivate this kind of hospitality in our lives, with our neighbors, having lunch, or walking with a coworker? Let's tune in now. If you'd like to watch more messages from this series on hospitality or any past teaching series, visit the teaching page of cccm.com.
Well, I do have a special announcement, and it's not a pleasant one, unfortunately. You guys are probably familiar with our junior high pastor, Travis, and his wife, Megan Clark. We love these people so, so much. But as we've been just praying with them, just discerning kind of the will of the Lord for them, for us, they have decided that it's time for them to move back home to Kansas City. Yeah, and so we're going to be saying goodbye to them in the next few months. And we will give them just a proper send-off. You know, we'll bring them up, we'll pray for them, we'll celebrate, you know, just kind of sending them to the next thing that God has for them. But we just wanted to share this news with you so that you can join us in praying for them as they transition back to their home. They haven't lived there in over 20 years, so this is going to be a big transition for them. But also just be praying for who those next leaders of our middle school ages will be. Travis and Megan have just done an incredible job with faithful volunteers just to make such, you know, in a hospitable space, kind of like Jordan and Grace were talking about. And my three kids have all benefited just from their love, from their care, from their examples. And so this is going to be, you know, a big loss for us, but we trust and believe that the Lord is with them and the Lord is with us. And so if you could just be praying with us for them, for their transition, and also just for who that next team of leaders are for junior high ministry, we would deeply appreciate that. So that is my big, sad announcement. We're going to jump in for our third and final week on this topic of a hospitable community. And I just want to remind you that we've been doing this short series because as we were making our way through Mark's gospel, we just saw how the way of Jesus is just so countercultural. It's just so different from, I mean, especially the way that we live our lives as Southern Californians, right? Jesus told us how we are to use our wealth and our power and our influence, and it's just so different. We're to use the wealth and resources God has given us to build his kingdom culture. We're to use our power and influence to speak for those who have no voice, those who are overlooked. We're to act to bring God's righteousness, God's justice, God's mercy just to those in deep need around us. And so these studies and some of the movements in our current culture have led me to believe that really hospitality and the church's generosity are just two of the greatest vehicles that God will use in this cultural moment to advance his kingdom and also to bring deep transformation to our lives. And I've mentioned that these big movements are the loneliness epidemic that we're seeing in our culture, that there is just this hunger and desire for connection and for community. And on top of that, there's a whole new generation that are asking really, really deep questions, and they're longing to do that in community. The question is, church, will we create welcoming, safe space for this next generation to be brought in to ask those questions? Will we be those surrogate mothers and fathers, aunts and uncles, grandmas and grandpas that will open up our lives and our homes and our church to them so that they can find Jesus. Secondly, there's been this strong return of nationalism in our country and also other Western nations. And so we've been looking at just this need for the actual foreigners, strangers, and refugees that are living in our own cities. How do we see these individuals? How will we welcome them? How will we just invite them into our community so that they might know the deep love of God, the God who loves the stranger, the God who welcomes those who are outsiders, those who are overlooked, who welcomes them to his table and makes them his honored guest. I've quoted from Christine Pohl's book for the last few weeks, Making Room. I highly recommend this for anyone who is just themselves wrestling with this question of Christian hospitality. But she writes this. She says, many of the current discussions about poverty and welfare, inclusion and diversity, scarcity and distribution are conducted without the benefit of any coherent theological framework. So often the result is that our stance on these complex social issues and public policy concerns are little affected by our deepest Christian values and commitments. So hospitality as a framework provides a bridge which connects our theology with daily life and concern. What she's saying is the danger is that the church can and does engage in these conversations and political action without a biblical framework. We're not bringing just the whole story of God's redemption, of his welcome of us to bear upon these conversations and political action. And so as a church, we've been considering that biblical story and framework together. And we saw how God is pictured all throughout Scripture as this gracious host who welcomes human beings into his family, at his table as honored guests. And we've seen how the Christian identity is one of deep indebtedness to God, to his kindness, to his hospitality and grace that he has shown us through Jesus. And we saw not just that God has done this for us in and through Jesus, but that this is now the family that we are a part of. This is now our story. This is the household economy and culture of God's kingdom. We are to practice God's own hospitality, welcome, and grace to anyone in need. Now, last week, we talked about how we cultivate this kind of hospitality here at Calvary Chapel. We said we should live as a welcoming, loving, integrating community that sees, welcomes, and cares for the stranger. Now, though we are living, as I mentioned, at a critical moment where we can respond in faithfulness as the people of God and practice God's own hospitality towards those who desperately need it, hospitality is just a way of life for the follower of Jesus. And so this morning, I just want to take an honest look at how we as individuals build and cultivate a life of hospitality. So let's stand together, if we are able, and read from Luke 24, verses 13 through 35. Just such an incredible story from the gospel. It says this, now that same day, this is resurrection morning. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and they were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. What are you discussing together as you walk along? They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, are you the only visitor or stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days? What things, he asked. About Jesus of Nazareth, they replied. He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. And the chief priests and our own rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. And in addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our own companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus. He said to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. And as they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he were going farther. But they urged him strongly, "Stay with us, for it is nearly evening, and the day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. And when he was at table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. And they asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?" So they got up, returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, "It is true, the Lord has risen and appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread. This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated. Now, generosity and hospitality is envisioned to flow from the life of the disciple of Jesus. Because God has welcomed us into his company, his family, he's redeemed us, he's given us a status as sons and daughters, we are inheriting all the riches and glory of Jesus himself. We are to reflect that same hospitality and generosity to those around us in all that we do. It's very similar to what we read in the Sermon on the Mount about God's love and God's children. Remember how Jesus taught how the Father in heaven is one who causes his rain to fall on the deserving and the undeserving? And so we are to be perfect, whole, complete, just as the Father's love is perfect, whole, and complete. Well, it's that same idea here. If this is who God is, then we as his children and his people are to reflect that same generosity and hospitality. And so we spent a lot of time talking about this these past weeks. But another aspect of hospitality that we haven't talked about is this mutuality of hospitality that shows up in the scriptures. And there are three particular passages in scripture that really show this in a powerful way. And the first one is found in Genesis chapter 18, verses 1 through 15, which is also the first explicit story of hospitality in the scriptures. Abraham welcomes three strangers in Mamre that are passing by his encampment, and it turns out to be the Lord himself. What Abraham does is almost textbook hospitality in the ancient Near East. We're told that Abraham sees the strangers. He immediately runs and greets the strangers. He invites the strangers in to receive his hospitality. He offers them water to drink. He washes their feet. He provides comfort and rest inside his lodging. He even goes all out to say, like, "Hey, we're going to slaughter the calf," even though they said no. "We're going to do it anyway. We're going above and beyond." And then also, Abraham promises he will not detain his guests from their travels. But what is so beautiful about this story is how Abraham moves from being the host of God himself to being God's guest and recipient of God's blessing and favor, as God makes clear at this time the timeline of the promised child through Sarah that Abraham and Sarah have been waiting for and longing for. And what is interesting about this story and the other stories that we're going to mention is Abraham receives much more than he gives. Another beautiful story of mutual hospitality in Scripture is the story of Elijah and the widow of Zarephath. That's found in 1 Kings chapter 17, verses 19 through 24. And in this context, Elijah had declared a judgment from God on the kingdom of Israel because of their idolatry, their evil, and their injustice. And so the judgment of God was this multi-year famine. And during this season, the Lord directs Elijah to go to the Gentile region of Sidon to a widow in particular, this widow of Zarephath. And when Elijah finds her, he asks for some water and bread, and she says, listen, I'm literally making my last meal for me and my only son, and then we're going to die. And Elijah just says, listen, if you will just feed me, give me water, the jar of flour will not be used up, and the jug of oil will not run dry until the day the Lord sends rain on the land. And then it says this, she went away and did as Elijah had told her, so there was food every day for Elijah and for the woman and her family. Now, later on, even in this story, this widow's only son dies. And Elijah raises him from the dead. And so this gift that this woman gives is just incomparable to the gift that Elijah gives. He gives sustenance, life-giving sustenance to her and her son, and even raises her son from the dead. Now, finally, there's a story that we just read together, these two despondent disciples who are traveling on their way from Jerusalem to Emmaus, when suddenly an unrecognized stranger, who is the risen Lord Jesus, joins them and is welcomed into their conversation. Now, by the end of their journey together, they invite Jesus. You know, he pretends as he's going to go on. They're like, no, stay with us. Come in and stay the evening with us. And then suddenly there is this change in dynamics where this stranger takes on the role of host at the table. It says, when he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Where have we heard this before? Yeah, it's the Last Supper. And their eyes are opened, and they recognized him, and he disappears from their sight. And they asked each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? In this story, two disciples offer hospitality to Jesus on the road. They invite him in as their guest. They invite him further in as their guest for the evening. But again, what they receive in return is incomparable to the hospitality that they originally gave, which is most likely they received the greatest Christ-centered sermon in all of history, right? Us Bible nerds are like, oh, to be a fly. But what's much, much more, in the breaking of the bread, they recognize the reality of their hope. Israel's king and Messiah raised from the dead. They received much, much more than they gave. Now, reading these stories, and this is just a sampling from Scripture, reading these stories, it's no wonder that the writer of Hebrews encouraged the church, do not forget to show hospitality to strangers. For by doing so, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. Now, these biblical stories do a number of things. I think first, they help us to realize that hospitality is not just an important virtue and biblical principle for the disciple of Jesus, but even more than that, in the context of hospitality, guest and host reveal precious gifts to one another, life-giving gifts that they share with one another. And so hospitality is often mutual. It's a give and a take. It's this kind of fluid movement where we go from host to guest to host to guest. It's almost like this dance. And I've found this to be true in my life over and over again. When I've stepped into moments of hospitality with others, I have been so surprised how mutual these relationships end up being. But I also want to point out that these stories show us that hospitality can be practiced in a myriad of ways. Maybe of welcoming others in, like Abraham. Of requesting hospitality, like Elijah. I need you to feed me. Or Jesus, right, with Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus, come down. I'm going to your house today. He's like, oh, okay, I didn't know, right? And then, of course, inviting others along in the journey like these two disciples. Now, again, these are principles. These are stories to help us imagine what hospitality might look like in our own lives, depending on our life circumstance, our means, our season of life. But what might it look like to do what Abraham does, to invite others in? What might it look like to be like, well, you know, I haven't been invited in, so I'm just going to invite myself over. The people have done this 1,000 times in my life. I'm like, okay, all right, we're getting lunch. Let's do it. Or simply inviting someone in to community, inviting someone in just as we're going along the way. Now, I want to remind us just what is biblical hospitality? Biblical hospitality, it's not about aesthetics. It's not about surroundings. It's not about our modern ideas of hospitality, which are really more in the realm of entertaining. Biblical hospitality really isn't about the space that we're in. It's not about the surroundings or even, you know, whether you have a home or don't have a home. These can all be part of hospitality, but biblical hospitality is so much more than this. I mentioned last week just that common saying, right? A house is not a home. In that same way, just because we invite someone into our home, into our own space, does not mean that we're actually practicing biblical hospitality. And as I have received some of the most powerful acts of hospitality, when I was thinking about just this teaching and what it looks like for us, I was just thinking about my own life. Oh my gosh, the places that I've received just the deepest Christian hospitality, it was like a warehouse space, you know, really cold, uninviting. It was a coffee shop. There's like, you know, 40 other people in that space. And it's many other places like that. I mentioned last week that in Romans 15, when Paul calls the church to welcome one another as Christ has welcomed them for the glory of God, the same word of welcome is used to describe taking someone in as a companion. It can be used to receive somebody into your home, again, with this idea of hospitality and kindness, but also to receive someone into just your own deep person, allowing them access to your heart, becoming your confidant. Henry Nouwen, he puts it this way. This is our vocation, to convert the hostess into a hospice, the enemy into a guest, and to create the free and fearless space where brotherhood and sisterhood can be formed and fully experienced. Biblical hospitality is a posture and practice that gives permission for humans just to be authentically human, just to be who they are, welcomed and comfortable in their own skin. Hospitality says you're never too much, you're always enough. We got you. You're welcome here. Hospitality sees and welcomes specific humans, the person right in front of us. It gives honor and dignity that every single human is unique, has their own individual complex story that needs to be known, it needs to be shared, it needs to be received and heard. Hospitality makes that kind of safe space for that to happen, for the true self to be revealed, for the true self to be seen and cared for. And honestly, the only way to practice and cultivate it in our lives is to just do it. Right? It's like prayer in a sense. There's no use in just sitting around and talking about it endlessly. At the end of the day, you just gotta pray. You just have to step into talking with God and listening to God. Well, in that same way, right, you can't just keep learning and learning about hospitality and thinking about it. You just got to step into it and make all the mistakes. Christine Pohl, in her book, again, Making Room, she writes this. One practitioner explains, I believe that hospitality means to give of yourself. Sounds a lot like Jesus, doesn't it? In other types of services, you can give of your talents, your skills, or resources. The tasks aren't what hospitality is about. Hospitality is giving of yourself. She says, if hospitality involves sharing your life and sharing in the lives of others, guests, strangers are not first defined by their need. Lives and resources are much more complexly intertwined and roles are much less predictable. Now, I'll never forget one of the most powerful moments of hospitality in my life happened in the middle, as I said, of a crowded coffee shop. I was here in town visiting family for Christmas, and I was able to break away just for a few hours from Grace, and we had two kids at the time. I think Judah was a toddler, Hudson was maybe 6 months old. You guys, this was one of the hardest seasons of our marriage and our lives. I felt so lonely, even in my marriage. Grace did too. We felt bewildered, defeated, hopeless, clueless about what was happening. We felt alone. I remember I met up with Jordan, and he just said, how's it going? And so I went there. I shared honestly just how defeated I felt, how alone I felt. And I remember he just said, well, join the club. And you guys, that wasn't much. I mean, we have a long history and long friendship. That right there just immediately took all my defenses down. Immediately, I felt seen. Immediately, I felt heard. I felt welcome. I felt safe that I could share just my deepest struggles and defeats as a pastor, as a father, as a husband in that season of life. I suddenly felt like there was hope, and I had someone who was in an equally difficult season of life and marriage, and we could journey together. It seriously changed everything. It was literally a pivotal moment in my life. No one is beyond the need of hospitality. We all need this kind of seeing and receiving and affirming. Now, I want you to notice again, it wasn't the space. It wasn't the quality of coffee. It was the posture in which I was received, heard, and affirmed. It was honestly as if Jesus himself was sitting there with me. I had a similar experience a few years later, and this time the Lord used me to play this role of host. And I had a dear friend whose child was experiencing just some severe night terrors. And these included hallucinations, just like this demonic manifestations and kind of oppression. And I could tell he was really struggling. And so I just asked him, like, man, what's going on? Are you okay? You seem like heavy. And so he decided to share with me in a moment of desperation, and I just listened. I validated him, and I was able to share. Actually, I had a very similar experience that happened to me as a child and what my parents did for me to care for me in that situation, in that season. That one conversation forever changed the vulnerability and dynamics of our friendship. And it was very interesting, actually. I was thinking about this. His daughter was here a number of weeks ago. She goes to Vanguard University right now. And as the first week I was sharing about hospitality, I'm telling her, Ginger, do you know that when Grace and I were in the hospital in Stanford, we were so lonely, we were so despondent, and just, you know, we just felt all alone, scared about the future of Evelyn and what was going to happen. Paul drove that 2.5 hours down to Stanford just to sit with Grace and I, to read Psalms of hope over us, to pray with us. And you guys, to be honest, I mean, it was probably awkward for him. He's just listening to us, you know, kind of emotionally vomit all over him. We kept breaking into, you know, weeping, and there were moments of silence and awkwardness, and he just loved on us. He made us feel safe. He gave us permission. In a cold hospital miles away from our home or his, this friend transformed this cold hospital space into a holy space of God's comfort and hope. You have the Spirit of Jesus in you. You can do this too. This is what God's people do. We create holy space through our own posture and presence, inviting Jesus into these moments with us to work and move and speak and comfort through us. What a gift. Now, in these stories, someone took responsibility to play host so that others could be welcomed as guests and given permission to share their true selves. And sometimes, as I mentioned, the role of hosts and guests were just much more fluid. This hospitality could have happened in a home, and often it does, but in these situations, it didn't. Because at the end of the day, it is about our heart posture. It's about our commitment to hospitality. And in these moments, I was transferred to a place just like home. There was another one. This one actually did happen in our home. I've been thinking about this one all week. We had a young woman in our church who we invited over because she desperately wanted to share her story with us. And her story was one that was just so, shocking, surprising. She told us how she had gone from somebody who was just being very open, sexually, you know, just kind of sleeping around, exploring, having fun. And she went from one of her roommates suggesting, you know, you can make a lot of money doing this. And so her roommate became her pimp. She started prostituting herself. The next thing she knew, she was in sex slavery. And so she just told us this radical story just of demonic oppression, all of these things that were just heavy, heavy on her, and how Jesus met her, delivered her, transformed her. And she was sitting at our table sharing this, and she says, I'm so ashamed to tell anybody else this story, but I knew we could tell it with you. And I'll never forget Grace's words to her was that you need to keep telling your story, because every time you tell it, it loses its power over you. You need to tell it again and again. Remind yourself of now who you are because what Jesus has done for you. And Grace was able to be that safe space, that voice over her life of receiving her story and giving her affirmation and just clear direction about her new identity in Jesus. What a gift. Now, I really want to emphasize that this hospitality is a lifestyle. It's a heart posture for the follower of Jesus, and it will take on different forms and expressions just depending on the seasons of life, depending on the person, depending on the circumstance. And so it's important to emphasize the heart and commitment, and that it can be practiced anywhere. I don't want you moms who have two young babies just thinking, oh gosh, I'm a failure. I'm not doing Christian hospitality. You need Christian hospitality right now, right? You're the needy one. Let your church community serve you. And so those of us who have been in the trenches, let's see those people. Let's invite them in. Let's be for others what we did not maybe have for ourselves. Remember how it was when you were a mom of two young children, right? Like Grace and I, we have this principle. We want to be for others what we did not have for ourselves. And so I pass that on to you. Now, I just want to share just some more just about my own life and just kind of what hospitality has looked like throughout my life. It has happened in so many different ways. Now, since I can remember, literally, my first memories of childhood are that we always had people in our home. Someone in need was always staying with us. Cousins lived with us during hard seasons with their parents, friends, members of our congregation, dealing with financial hardship, broken relationships. There were regularly strangers at our dinner table. We always had guests and strangers in the home all the time. And my parents can tell you, I mean, many times we were duped, right? My dad has this crazy story about this guy who's like, oh, I need to work on my VW bus and I just need a place to do it. You know, I got it all figured out. And he tows it down to our garage. They dismantle the whole thing and the guy breaks down in tears, says, I have no idea what I'm doing. I've never, fixed a car in my life. So times where, you know, hospitality did not turn out great, but you know what? The love, the grace was always, always there. My parents have been such models to me of generosity and hospitality in times of plenty, in times of scarcity. Even to this day, you know, we joke around about the Broderson Hotel, the Broderson Bed and Breakfast. If you know what I mean, though, it wasn't just that. They deeply care for people, listen, help. They make safe space for those that are brought in. And it's made just this indelible mark on my life. For me, growing up, Christian hospitality wasn't optional. It's just what you do as a follower of Jesus. And it's such a shining picture of God's generosity and hospitality. But listen, it doesn't mean that it wasn't awkward and uncomfortable at times. And that we didn't, as I said, have some strange guests at our home. We had Sven. I was gone for 6 weeks on the coast of England, only to come home to my freshly graduated Bible college roommate, Sven. And there's no zeal like a freshly graduated Bible college roommate. He had totally rearranged my room and added his own decorations. He took away all my secular music CDs, you know, and played his, Vineyard Worship nonstop. You may be able to tell that I was not a huge fan of Sven, but we were committed to hospitality, and Sven needed belonging and love, and eventually he found his own place to live, thank God. But then there was also Kenny Wood. As a lonely 13-year-old living thousands of miles away from my friends and home, living in London, England, Kenny Wood became my first real friend in England. Kenny's like 15 years older than I am. There was this docu-series that my mom made me watch on the kings and queens of England for my homeschooling, you know, curriculum, history class, or whatever. And Kenny loved it. So, like, every afternoon, him and I were sitting on the couch. I had no idea who this guy was, but we're watching these, you know, documentaries together and just bonding over just the craziness of just, like, some of these, you know, deception and murder and all these things that happened in the monarchy. But all that to say, we offered Kenny welcome and belonging. Kenny offered me welcome and friendship. And he is still my friend, my dearly loved friend to this day. All this to say, because of our commitment to hospitality, we experience so much goodness. There's just these stories of God's faithfulness that encourage and strengthen our own faith. We received unforeseen friendships, wisdom, these gifts that have forever changed and enriched our lives, but it hasn't come without the awkwardness. And you just, like Corey says, you just got to lean into the awkward. I remember there was this one individual when Grace and I hosted home group who, you know, he would come early, he would stay late, and he would just stand at our door just silently. Like 15 minutes, he'd just stare and look at us. I'm like, I'm doing the dishes. I can't handle this, you know? This is like awkwardness is killing me. And Grace is like, oh, I just lean in. I just open my eyes a little wider. Like, I can go there. Lean into the awkward. We do it because we are the people of God, and this is what God has done for us in Jesus. Now, when I was a young man living 500 miles away from home, the roles changed. I received so much hospitality from others. I didn't have the means or the resources to really practice hospitality. I probably didn't really understand what it was at that time. But man, I was welcomed into a new community. I was given so many free meals just as this young, cocky, you know, 22-year-old, invitations to family gatherings, but most of all, I was accepted as I was. Warts and all, made to feel welcome. The people were glad that I was there, felt I could be myself. I could receive help and care. As I said, when Grace and I were married, we had our own home, and we loved to host. Grace is an incredible host, and we had a regular home group. As I mentioned, people showed up way earlier than they were supposed to. They stayed way later than we wanted. And Grace just did an incredible job just of hosting people, delicious snacks sponsored by Trader Joe's always, right? And when people stayed late, and they often did because they were lonely, they needed friends, they needed care, they needed counsel. So when they stayed late, we busted out cheese quesadillas and tapatio, right? It wasn't fancy, but it was real. We're hungry. I'm like, okay, let's make something. So now, some of these individuals, as I mentioned, were socially awkward. Some were incredibly lonely and defeated, working through divorce, struggling widows and single moms, newlyweds, just trying to figure life out. It wasn't always convenient. And many times, I didn't want to have people over. I was tired. We had our own three children. But at our kitchen table and in our living room, we heard the most powerful testimonies of God's salvation and deliverance, God's presence and faithful provision. We were able to receive incredible wisdom and insight to our own lives, found new friends. My children experienced surrogate aunts and uncles, grandmas and grandpas. And in the end, I believe we receive far more than we ever gave. That's the testimony of my life. Now, I share my own story as a way to show what hospitality has looked like in my life. But you don't have my life, and I don't have yours. And so I think it's important for us just to stop and think, in what ways have I received that same kind of welcome and hospitality? What does that look like in my life? When did I feel seen, heard, loved, and cared for? Or maybe, when did I not experience those things? And I want to be for others what I didn't have. I ask this because what would it look like for you to put this kind of hospitality into practice in your own life? Who around you is overlooked, unwelcome, too much? And how can you make safe space for those individuals and cause them to experience through you the welcome and generous hospitality of Jesus? Again, Christine Pohl, in her book, Making Room, she says this: as a way of life, an act of love, an expression of faith, our hospitality reflects and anticipates God's welcome. Simultaneously costly and wonderfully rewarding, hospitality often involves small deaths and little resurrections. By God's grace, we can grow more willing, more eager to open the door to a needy neighbor, a weary sister or brother, a stranger in distress. Perhaps as we open that door more regularly, we will grow increasingly sensitive to the quiet knock of angels. In the midst of a life-giving practice, we too might catch glimpses of Jesus who asks for our welcome and welcomes us home. I love that. Small deaths and little resurrections. I mean, that is the testimony of the life of disciples, isn't it? We who are always being given over to death so that the life of Jesus might be made manifest through us. That's how Paul describes the Christian life. Handing ourselves over so that Jesus can be put on display through us. And yet, God is so kind and so good is that he often meets us in those little deaths, those small deaths, with little resurrections, signs of new life, of new hope, of fresh grace. It's a powerful picture of what God is calling us into. Following in the way of Jesus just to give our lives for the sake of others. These little deaths to self that we practice and experience to welcome people who are not like us, but who desperately need a real life, flesh and bones display an example of the welcome and love of God. And simultaneously, God will surprise us by meeting us with that resurrection life. Unforeseen blessings, friendships, stories and testimonies, help and encouragement to our own lives, the presence of Jesus in our very midst. Now, as I've been saying, there's this identity that we are called to into followers as Jesus, to continue his life-giving mission to the world by serving it, welcoming it, loving it in the same way that Jesus has served, welcomed, and loved us. And there is also a deep and desperate need of the world around us for friendly, welcoming hospitality. And so just like God has welcomed you, how will you welcome those around you who are far from God? How will you invite them in? Will you invite them over into your home? Will you invite yourself over into their home? Say, hey, I want to be your friend. I choose you. Will you just simply invite them into your company? Take a walk with me. Come along with me. Who are the people around you that need this hospitality? And again, what would it look like to simply cultivate this kind of welcome in your life? May the Spirit give us wisdom and application for these things. Now, for the last time, I just want to close with this incredible vision for Christian hospitality from Nancy Piercy. She says, the strongest Christian communities, families, congregations, groups of singles, are those driven by a larger vision, a sense of ministry. We carry in our bodies the identity and mission of Jesus everywhere we go. So if God has given you a dependable income, a loving spouse, a strong church community, a reliable group of friends, those gifts are not just for you. They are to equip you to reach out and draw in those who are broken and searching. God is giving you and me the opportunity to bring hope that Christianity is real. It's not just words. We're not just playing church. To put flesh and bones on the message of hope and healing, Christians must be prepared to minister to the wounded and the refugees of the secular moral revolution because their lives have been wrecked by its false promises of freedom and autonomy. She says, we are at a unique moment in history where we have an incredible opportunity to become safe havens where people witness the beauty of relationships reflecting God's own commitment and faithfulness. May it be so with us. May the Spirit just give us insight as to what this might look like in our own lives, to extend the welcome to those outside, to be a church and a people who, like God, love the stranger. Now, as you come to our close together, like every other week, we come to the table and we are reminded of God's own hospitality and welcome to us. We are invited to his table as his special honored guest. And we believe that the Spirit of Jesus is here. Just like with those disciples on the road to Emmaus, he is performing this act of service and hospitality for us. He wants to reveal himself, who he is to us in the breaking of the bread, so that we might consume, that we might partake and we might participate in his life, in his identity and his mission. And so, church, I invite you to come this morning and to partake and participate in the life and mission of Jesus. Come, partake of the life that Jesus has made available to you through the pouring out of his blood for many. And again, for those of you today who may feel that you do not deserve this offer, that you're an outsider, that you're not welcome, Jesus welcomes you. He says, anyone who is thirsty, anyone who is weary, they can come to me. I'll satisfy them. I will give them rest. All you need to do is come. You are welcome at the table of Jesus. And so we invite you to come forward to take the bread and the cup, which represents Jesus' life given in service for you, for your forgiveness, for your renewal, for your restoration. Come, partake, and participate in the life he's made available for you. So whoever you are, we invite you to come to the table, take the elements, take them back to your seat, talk with Jesus. Ask the Spirit, make it clear what this means for me. How do I participate in the life and mission of Jesus today? Partake and be thankful. May the Lord bless you and keep you.